Today on Blue 58, we're capping off our position-by-position look at the 2023 Packers with a tour through the safety room, a check-in with the offensive line, and a quick look at the specialist.
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I am your host, John Meerdink, and I am happy to be with you here for another episode for a number of reasons. First, we get to cap off our position-by-position look at the Packers, as I said in the intro, and it's good to have that over because I am ready to start looking ahead to 2024. Free agency is coming. The combine is all but over. I think it's technically over. It doesn't really matter. We're coming to an end here. And the draft is not far away. And I'm ready to start looking at those kinds of things and leave the 2023 Packers behind us. And with that in mind, just a heads up, in case you haven't noticed, It's getting to be go time with free agency and things like that. So be ready for news to come about Packers free agents, either guys getting released, think Devondre Campbell or David Bakhtiari, or a couple of other guys, one of whom we're going to mention in this episode, or news about potential re-signings, think Keyshawn Nixon. We've got some news out there about John Runyon today, or maybe even some rumblings about who the Packers could be interested in if they decide they want to spend in free agency. That stuff has all been percolating kind of behind the scenes at the NFL Combine because that's the B-side to what goes on the field at the Combine. You've got all the guys running and jumping and lifting on the field and doing their team meetings and stuff, but that's also the place where teams meet with agents and hammer out deals behind the scenes even before the legal tampering period, the worst name in sports. If it's legal, it's not tampering, and if it's tampering, it's not legal. That aside, this is where the business gets done. A lot of this stuff gets hammered out, the broad strokes, and then once that period opens, it's go time. And that's coming soon. So we're going to wrap up our look at the Packers from 2023 here. Then the next episode, we're going to be talking about free agency stuff, guys going out, guys coming in. And then next week, we start draft prep, and I'm ready to get to work on this. So, safeties, offensive line, and specialists. Safeties, I think, went exactly as expected for the better and usually for worse. Looking at the entirety of this position group, I think it's hard to find a bright spot. I don't think there's anybody who got a ton of playing time in 2023 where you're like, okay, good job, feel solid about where he was at, and I would want him back on the team for 2024 for sure. The one possible exception there is Anthony Johnson, who's going to probably get another crack here in 2024 just because he's on a rookie deal. But outside of that, you might be looking at turning over the entire position group, very similar to what the Packers did with wide receiver over the past couple of years, except you're not coming off a spot where you had Hall of Fame level play that you just transitioned into this, transition period where you're trying to find out what's next. The Packers have never been great at safety, really, since Nick Collins had his unfortunate injury. They've been frequently good, maybe stretching the definition of the word good there, but solid enough, put it that way. Adrian Amos had his solid years. Morgan Burnett had his solid years, but they've never really had a great safety since Nick Collins, and that certainly wasn't the case in 2023. We had a few guys who we would categorize as cameo players. Benny Sapp played 3 snaps on defense, 40 on special teams. Innis Gaines, 6 on defense, 59 on special teams. Dallin Leavitt, 9 on defense, 196 on special teams. Of those 3, Benny Sapp's the only one who's going to be back for 2024. Pretty good athlete, might have a chance for a bigger role next year, but probably looking at more special teams reps for him in 2024. In terms of the guys who actually played, we start with Anthony Johnson. 303 snaps on defense, another 57 on special teams. To me, that looks like a surprising split for a 7th-round rookie. You would think primarily he's going to be a special teams player. We saw that with a couple other guys on the roster. Benny Sapp, for one. Innis Gaines kind of falls into that category too, though by no means a rookie anymore. You would have expected that a guy just coming into the league as a good athlete, 7th-round pick, is going to end up playing a lot of reps on special teams and not so much on defense, but that really wasn't the case for Johnson. I think it kind of sends the message that they were playing him on defense as much from necessity as thinking he was any good at all. There is a small undercurrent there, though, that they wanted to get a look at him because they essentially benched Rudy Ford in favor of him in the back half of the season, and Ford dealt with some injury stuff in there as well. But Johnson took basically all of his playing time in the second half of the season. And that's how it went. That was the story of the season for those two players. terms of stats, Johnson finishes his rookie year 24 tackles, 1 interception, and 3 passes defensed. In coverage, 5 of 7 for 60 yards, did not give up a touchdown or create an interception. His interception came off a deflection. Gave up a passer rating of 57.7. An asterisk on this one, though, because this number only counts plays where you are targeted. And to be targeted, you have to be in coverage. And to be in coverage, you have to do what you're supposed to do, which leads me to a very noteworthy play from the divisional round game against the 49ers, where Johnson was part of a busted coverage that led to George Kittle scoring a long touchdown. Now, Johnson wasn't technically in coverage there, so it can't count as him getting targeted, but he was only not in coverage because he was so out of position that George Kittle was wide open, and you start to see the problem with that stat. Prediction-wise, the bar was very low for Johnson. I predicted he'd appear in a game, and he did. Overall, though, not really an asset to the secondary. Clearly, I think, still a developmental prospect. And remember, when you think about Anthony Johnson, you have to remember he is very new to playing safety. He played a grand total of 76 snaps as a deep safety in his entire college career, switching over from corner. Played a lot more in the slot, even, than he did at safety in college. So we're still in the very early stages of Anthony Johnson, the safety. And I think there's still reason to be interested, even if he didn't show this much or that much this year. Got the good size-speed combo, a track record of making plays on the ball dating back to college, a low-cost guy, I think worth another shot next year. So did he meet expectations? Honestly, who cares, I guess. But the expectations are going to be so low for a guy who's in the seventh round anyway, who's really only playing out of necessity. It doesn't really matter if he met them or not. As far as his outlook for next year, everything's going to look different in Halfley's defense, especially on the back end, so put a pin in that one for now. Next up is Darnell Savage, 558 snaps on defense, 51 on special teams. Box score stats, in the regular season, 51 tackles, 1 pass defense, did have one very noteworthy play in the postseason, probably the play of his career, breaking on the ball, taking an interception, back for a touchdown against the Cowboys to seal off the Packers' scoring blitz there in the first half. As far as the regular season goes, just one ball hawk in that regular season, a career low for him, and that is a bad sign for a guy whose calling card has always been making plays on the ball, even dating back to college. Finished the season, according to Pro Football Focus, 19 of 24 in coverage, 183 yards, gave up 2 touchdowns, did have the 1 interception in the postseason, a passer rating allowed of 108.9. Prediction-wise, I did predict he'd improve his missed tackle rate this year. And just kind of by a technicality, he did. He dropped from 18.8% missed tackle rate to 17.3%. Woo. Yay. Good job, Darnell. We predicted also that he'd have 2 or more interceptions. Didn't make it, not even counting postseason. The era of Darnell Savage reliably making plays on the ball appears to be at an end. Overall, I kind of feel like the Darnell Savage story has run its course in Green Bay. I don't want to be too critical here because this is a load of work. But Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com, does a position-by-position recap, much like this one, does some in-depth grading. You can quibble with him on some of the process stuff, but I think overall it's a solid look at the Packers. And much like Bob McGinn's effort to do that before him, it gives you a year-by-year sort of perspective on where guys are. However, in his look at safeties, he makes the case that Darnell Savage has essentially been miscast in his time in Green Bay. He says that Savage really isn't a safety. He's more of a nickel corner, and he's playing out of position in Green Bay. That is a nice sentiment, and it gives Savage a nice kind of out for why maybe he hasn't been as good over the balance of his career as he could be. Unfortunately, it doesn't really align with the facts. The Packers have done a great deal of experimenting with Savage. In 3 of his 5 seasons in Green Bay, he played at least 23% of his snaps in the slot. That has been as high as 28%. The point is he's moved around a lot. He spent a lot of time in the box. He spent time deep. And it is true that he did play more in the slot and as a kind of box safety in college than in the NFL. But he is, I think, singularly ill-suited to do that in the NFL, because he's not a big-bodied guy, he's not a particularly reliable tackler, and he's not especially good against the run, which are 3 things that you really need to do or have if you're going to be playing near the line of scrimmage or in the slot. He would be a liability if he was doing that regularly in the NFL. whether you think they should give him more snaps in the slot or not, though, the point is that wherever the Packers have put him, as his career has gone on, he just hasn't delivered enough. The Packers have given him a lot of opportunities to prove himself, either as a deep safety, a guy playing near the line of scrimmage, playing in the slot, where have you, what have you. He just hasn't delivered. So he didn't meet expectations in 2023. He hasn't done it for the balance of his career. And I think that should, you know, put an end to his time in Green Bay. However, as we look ahead to 2024, even though he's going to be a free agent, I could see a future where the Packers do want to re-sign him. Look at the guys that they have hitting free agency. You've got Darnell Savage, of course. You've got Rudy Ford. You've got Jonathan Owens. Of those three guys, who is the most reliable known commodity? Who has the best athleticism? Who is the youngest of those three? I don't know what Jonathan Owens' age is, but Savage is younger than Ford for sure. All that to say, I could see a future where the Packers want to re-sign him just so they have something resembling a known commodity in their secondary as they head into this defense. I can see a case for that. I don't think it's a strong case, and I certainly wouldn't want to do that before the draft. I say let Savage test free agency, see how the draft works out for you, and if the rest of the league decides he's not worth being back or bringing to their team on a big contract, see what you can do maybe after the draft. We get to late April, early May, if he's still a free agent, see how things go at that point. I don't think you rule it out entirely. I just wouldn't be rushing to bring him back in Green Bay. And if the Packers decide they don't want him at all, I think that's fine. That is totally fine in my book. Rudy Ford is next up, 626 snaps on defense, another 52 on special teams. Packers really did not play him very much on special teams this year, which was his calling card when he was signed a couple years ago. It was essentially benched for Anthony Johnson, as we mentioned, in the back half of the season. Games 1 through 7, he played 100% of the Packers' defensive snaps in all but one game. The one game he didn't was the Bears game, where the Packers were pulling starters down the stretch. He was inactive for the Packers' 8th game, then played 100% of the snaps again in Game 9, inactive for 2 more games due to injury stuff, then played single-digit snaps in all but one game the rest of the way, and also spent time on the injured list from there. Box score stats, 47 tackles, 2 interceptions, 6 passes defensed, was 9 of 22 for 88 yards in coverage, 1 touchdown allowed, 2 interceptions, a passer rating allowed of 30.1. His 8 ball hawks were 6th on the team. I thought, prediction-wise, that he would start the most games out of the safeties not named Darnell Savage. So my thinking going into last season was, you've got Darnell Savage, he's going to kind of be the anchor in that secondary group, such as he is, and then you're going to rotate in other guys around him. Jonathan Owens ended up beating out both Ford and Savage for that kind of role, and really was their most reliable safety, at least in terms of availability and playing time. They liked what Owens did and had him on the field doing it a lot. In terms of Ford, the Packers just seem to have moved on. He did make some plays when he was out there, but they don't seem to think he's the future and allotted him playing time accordingly. As far as expectations for him, I have to say no, he did not meet expectations this past year just because of that benching. If you have people actively siphoning off your snaps just so they can get a look at somebody else, it's hard to say you're cutting the mustard out there. 2024, I'm assuming he's not in Green Bay. He turns 30 in November. If, generally speaking, you're looking to be younger, why keep around the guy that you're trying to replace anyway? Kind of same deal as Savage. If you get through free agency here, if you get through the draft and he's still out there, maybe think about bringing him back. Certainly you could do worse than Rudy Ford as your 4th safety, maybe 5th safety who plays special teams a whole bunch. But I think if you're just looking for the future at the position, you're looking somewhere other than Rudy Ford. Jonathan Owens wraps things up for us, 775 snaps on defense, 233 on special teams. His 1,008 total snaps were right up there with Keyshawn Nixon for the second most on the team other than offensive linemen and quarterbacks. A bunch of caveats there, but he did play a lot, I guess is the point. 84 tackles, 3 passes defensed, 1 fumble forced this year. Also recovered a fumble for a touchdown on Thanksgiving. What a gift that was for him. Fell right in his lap, and all he had to do was coast 27 yards for a touchdown. Hey, sometimes things just bounce your way, and when they do, you got to be there to take advantage, and Owen certainly was. His 5 total ball hawks, 14th on the team, was 26 of 38 allowing completions in coverage, 4 touchdowns, 269 yards. Don't have his passer rating written down, but it was not good. Relevant predictions thought he would start a game and outplay Tarvarius Moore, who was one of the Packers' other free agent signings this past offseason. Moore ended up not making the cut because he was injured for most of preseason. His loss was Owens' gain, and Owens took advantage of it. He was the better of the two safety signings and played accordingly. Like I said, he and Moore, they're two big defensive offseason additions, if you can call that a big addition. But they were trying to make something happen with both Owens and Moore. I thought the difference between the two would be special teams. Moore was really the longtime special teamer in the NFL. Owens didn't have a bunch of playing time on special teams, but it really wasn't. Owens played a ton on defense. Moore could not match that, and Owens just soaked up a lot of snaps. Even if he wasn't great, you do need those guys that can just eat up snaps and not be a complete liability, though Owens was a liability at times on defense. And, well, sometimes you have a liability on defense, and it looks like that's something the Packers are going to have to fix into 2024. Owens, I wouldn't really anticipate being back, though kind of the same as with the other guys here. Maybe you wait and see, and something works out for the Packers. On to the offensive line, where I think in 2023 we saw the value of patience and development. The start of this year was a little bit rocky. The line was in flux. Part of that was due to David Bakhtiari's situation, which sorted itself out for better or for worse. We'll talk about that in a second here. But you had a couple of different movement situations. Timeshares, we called them at points during the season. Rashid Walker and Yosh Nyman at left tackle. John Runyon and Sean Ryan at right guard. But in the end, it seems like the overall product was solid. Run blocking has always been a little bit of an issue with these lighter Packers offensive lines. Maybe that's something we can address here in this year's draft. But by and large, I don't think a lot of complaints on this offensive line in terms of keeping Jordan Love safe and upright in his first year as the Packers starter. Worth mentioning a couple names that don't even really qualify as cameo players. Caleb Jones played no snaps on offense, 1 snap on special teams. 2 years in a row now he's getting the Rashid Walker treatment, where he's basically redshirted. 2024 is going to be where the rubber meets the road for him. You've got to make things work or make your way out of Green Bay, I think. Same kind of goes for Luke Tenuta, who the Packers really seem to like, and they kept him on injured reserve all year with the idea of potentially bringing him back. Was practicing towards the end of the year, but ultimately didn't end up on the roster for any meaningful playing time, or any playing time at all, for that matter. David Bakhtiari technically counts as what we would call a cameo player. And just as an aside, we're not going to go super in-depth on offensive line performance. This is mostly just impressions, because I am not qualified to go player by player and talk about really what they did on an in-depth basis, game in, game out, play in, play out. But I think we can get some fairly accurate overall vibes on these guys and talk about their future in Green Bay. So starting with David Bakhtiari, 55 snaps on offense, all in week one. It was so good and then so bad yet again. But I think at this point it's basically just shame on me for having hope at this point. Just because things seem so bad with his knee that this should have been an out-and-out career ender there at the end of 2020. Were it 25 years ago, it probably just would have been. And it's probably a testament to how hard he's worked to come back and the advances in ACL science and all of that that have even made it possible. But I think we're at the end of the road here. The Packers have to make a decision that results in David Bakhtiari not being in Green Bay anymore. Just because it is so advantageous cap-wise for them to do that, you're still going to have some dead money, but take your medicine and move on, because he's not going to be a part of the Packers' long-term plans. As we talk about his injury recovery, if this is the kind of end point for Bakhtiari in Green Bay, I want to talk about the theory that he's kind of sandbagging it. It's out there. It's not really been part of any credible discussion of his injury. But there are people out there, and you've probably interacted with them if you have any conversation about Bakhtiari, who think that he's, I don't know, faking it or going through just enough rehab to, I don't know, get back on the field and then go on injured reserve, or that he's not really trying. And just it makes no sense. It does not work that way. Look up some videos of ACL rehab sometime and see what it takes to get back to full NFL strength with rehabbing from an ACL injury. Back when he was part of the Green Bay Packers, Al Harris tore his knee and posted a pretty exhaustive weekly video diary, which is still available, I think, on YouTube, about what it's like to go and get treatment and the things you got to do. And I would recommend watching that if you have any curiosity as to what it's like to recover from an ACL injury, especially at a position that requires speed and agility and cutting and all of that. And also, I wouldn't recommend watching it if you want to see a grown man in tears over the pain of trying to regain mobility in a surgically repaired knee. The idea that Bakhtiari would not be rehabbing to full strength, just trying to get by or fool somebody, just doesn't hold water. It requires him to go through just enough rehab to fool an NFL training staff and a coaching staff into letting him play, but then saying, oh, I'm sorry, my knee just can't go. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, he's doing all this work for what? For nothing? Like, it doesn't hold up to any kind of scrutiny. I believe that he's done everything he can to get back on the field, and it just has not worked for whatever reason. Maybe it's a mental hang-up about playing on a surgically repaired knee. Maybe it's something else, but for whatever reason, it just is not working for him. The knee is just not where it needs to be for him to play, and that's just the end of it. Sometimes that's how it works out. His 2024 future is probably not in Green Bay. Either way, I'm fatigued of the story, and you probably are as well. Next up is Royce Newman, 183 snaps on offense, 73 on special teams. All but 10 of his offensive snaps came in the first 4 weeks of the season. The Royce Newman story is done, in my opinion. He is a good cut candidate because performance pay has bumped up his cap number. The Packers could save about $3 million by cutting him. That seems like a no-brainer to me because you've got Sean Ryan waiting in the wings, 183 snaps on offense, 13 on special teams. Bit of the timeshare situation with John Runyon down the stretch. His playing time steadily increased, then tailed off slightly in the playoffs as Runyon played a little bit more. But he did only play fewer than 26 snaps in one game from week 15 through the end of the season. They're giving it a try with Runyon. I would say you didn't really meet expectations in 2023 because you should be better than where he was as a second-year, third-round pick. Should be further along than this. That doesn't seem controversial to say. And yet the Packers are giving him every chance to show that he deserves a shot here, and they're really going to try. I like his size. Looking ahead to 2024, he's the heaviest of the Packers' interior offensive linemen, and that is something they could probably stand to address this offseason as well. They could get a little bit bigger at both guard spots if they really wanted to. They've been pretty light across the front as a rule here the last few years. But at 321 pounds, Ryan is a little bit bigger than some of these other guys up front, right up there with Josh Myers, who I think might be the exact same size at 321. But they could use a little bit more beef up front, and Ryan at least has that. He's 14 pounds heavier by listed weight than John Runyon. Shoot, it's worth a shot. Next up is Yosh Nijman, 231 snaps on offense, another 108 on special teams. The story on Nijman is there's nobody who lost more money on the 2023 Packers than Yosh did. Look at the arc of his career. An undrafted free agent, plays very sparingly in 2020, but 590 snaps in 2021, 756 snaps in 2022. He's heading into 2023 with a chance to hit true free agency after a season as a starting tackle in the NFL. There is serious guaranteed money on the table for him heading into 2023. Because last spring, there were at least seven different tackles, who had double-digit millions of dollars in guaranteed money in free agency last year, either by switching teams or re-signing with their own team. A bunch of other guys were in the single digits of millions of dollars. We're talking enormous sums of money here that is on the line for Nijman. Instead, he loses the right tackle battle to Zach Tom, and it was a battle. Nijman played 40 or more snaps at right tackle in two of the Packers' three preseason games. Then, when David Bakhtiari goes down, Rashid Walker gets first crack at left tackle. They did kind of their timeshare situation later, but Walker decisively won that one. Nijman wasn't playing at all on offense by the end of the season. This is literally the worst possible outcome other than ones that include a catastrophic injury for Nijman. He will still probably get a fairly decent free agent deal, but man, he's got to be looking at what could have been in terms of what guys will be doing in free agency this year. Did he meet expectations? No, not mine, not yours, probably not his either. Free agency is going to be interesting. Have to wonder if there's a chance with a depressed market that he's back in Green Bay. Probably not, though. Anybody who's at all interested in a potentially starting caliber tackle is probably coming to Yosh Nijman after the initial run kind of dries up. But again, he's not going to be the top, most sought-after guy in the market, and he very well could have been had things gone kind of in the direction that they had been for Nijman heading into 2023. Rashid Walker, 851 snaps on offense, 73 on special teams. If you told me in July that Rashid Walker was going to play 851 snaps on offense, I would assume that something had happened in a terrible fashion to both David Bakhtiari and Yosh Nijman. But truly, after Bakhtiari went down, it was Walker's job to lose. He well and truly just beat out Nijman for the job. He was not perfect. Penalties alone are a significant ding on his performance in 2023. He tied J.J. Enagbare as the most penalized Packers player, and that only accounts for penalties that were accepted. Overall, just raw numbers, he was the most penalized guy on the field for the Packers this season. 9 penalties. 3 of them were declined, but he had 4 false starts, 3 holding penalties, a face mask, and an ineligible downfield. That is quite an accomplishment in a single season. All that said, though, have to say he met expectations. Second-year late-round draft pick, not perfect, but a huge step in the right direction for Walker heading into 2024. He probably has to win that job again, but he's got to have an inside track, I would say. That is certainly not a guarantee. Just look at what happened to Yosh Nijman. But, hey, he's going to have a really good shot. 2 more offensive linemen, 3 more offensive linemen on our list. 903 snaps for Elgton Jenkins puts him next on our list. Another 10 snaps on special teams. Worth remembering that this was his first full season back from ACL injury, from his ACL injury sustained in November 2021. It might be worth it, I think, to do an ACL tracker at thepowersweep.com at some point, just keeping track of when guys that had that injury were injured that are on the roster and how long it's been and their performance before and after that injury. But it's important to keep track of when that happened, I guess, is my point there. Pro Football Focus, according to their grading, they say he was a consistent liability in the ground game this past year. Take that for whatever that's worth. I think he's still a very valuable part of the offensive line. I would say he met expectations this year, but the pressure is kind of ratcheting up, I think, on Elton a little bit too. We're getting into the meat of that contract extension. Cap numbers keep going up, and expectations go up accordingly. He's going to be their highest-paid offensive lineman by a far sight here in 2024 after the departure, assuming he departs, of David Bakhtiari. And he's going to be counted on to be one of or their very best offensive lineman next year. It is also worth remembering that there are provisions in the contract they gave him that give him incentives for playing well at tackle and guard. That always has to be on the table, I think, with Jenkins. A potential move to tackle, we'll see. But I don't think you can rule it out. John Runyon, 928 snaps on offense, 10 on special teams. Overall, I think he took a step back in 2023. It's hard to spin it any other way. Had more than 1,000 snaps in 2021, more than 1,000 snaps in 2022, an unquestioned starter on the offensive line. Then in 2023, they're splitting your reps with a guy who didn't essentially play at all in 2022. That is as you were expected to be a free agency the following offseason. Doesn't seem to be a sign that things are going super well for you. So I don't think he met expectations at all in 2023. But he didn't really have a solid hold on his job all year long, so it's really hard to spin it, I think, any other way. I think he probably ends up landing elsewhere and is probably going to do fairly well for himself in free agency. However, according to The Athletic's Matt Schneidman, the Packers did meet with his agent at the Combine. There is supposedly mutual interest. We will see how mutual that interest actually is once actual numbers start getting thrown around. My guess is that this is probably one of those situations where they're like, yeah, both sides were interested in making this work. It's just like there's too much money out there in free agency, so they decided to let him go. I don't think you're missing out on all that much if you decide to move on from John Runyon, especially if it nets you a decent compensatory pick in next offseason's allotment of compensatory picks. Zach Tom, next up for us, 117 games, 17 starts, 1,067 snaps on offense. All but 4 of them came at right tackle. He did play 4 at center this year, 30 snaps on special teams in addition. Probably was the Packers' best offensive lineman this past season. Certainly their most reliable, their most consistently healthy. Out of the three offensive linemen who played every game, I think he's easily the best, the other two being John Runyon and Josh Myers. I think he pretty easily met expectations here, and he's not going to have to compete for a job as he heads into 2024. Finally, Josh Myers finishes out our offensive line review. 1,089 snaps on offense, another 66 snaps on special teams. I think his season feels a lot different. If the Packers hadn't openly talked about him needing to compete for his job last offseason, then kind of walking that back. Is he a great player? No, but I think the Packers didn't do him any favors last offseason. They brought some pressure on him that was definitely not warranted given how they handled the rest of the offseason. So I would say a soft yes in terms of met expectations because, look, they said he was going to have to battle for his job. I guess he did. And then he stayed the Packers starting center all year long. But I think he's going to have to do that again. He should be looking at what happened to John Runyon as a sign for what could happen to him heading into 2024. So Myers was the day one starting center in 2021, had a bunch of injuries as a rookie, but was their guy start to finish whenever he was healthy. 2022, their starter start to finish. 2023, starter start to finish. 2024... after a couple maybe shaky seasons, if the Packers bring in some competition on the interior of the offensive line, I think, again, the most vulnerable spot is either going to be center or right guard, much like it was last season. Myers' job is not 100% safe. And if you could get another guy in there to compete at center, hey, you never know what could happen, and he's going to have to win that job again. Let's close here by talking very quickly about a few of the Packers' specialists. Now, we got a couple different breeds of specialists here. We've got guys that, you know, did the kicking stuff. So you got your kicker, your punter, and your long snapper, and guys that played exclusively on special teams. This is not even did they meet expectations or not. This is just a couple of facts about some of those guys in those categories. Kicker-wise, I don't have anything to say about Anders Carlson that I haven't said already. We're not going to belabor that point anymore. He was kind of put in a tough situation just by the Packers' expectations growing over the course of the year. That said, rebuilding year stuff is kind of a poor excuse for not doing well at your job. The fact that Carlson wasn't good doesn't really change one way or another because the expectations were for the Packers were low at the start of the season. If the Packers were bad start to finish this year and Carlson was still bad as well, Carlson would still have been bad, whether or not the Packers were bad. At the end of the season, the Packers were playing well, but Carlson wasn't, and he was a part of the reason that their season ended when it did. Like, him being good or bad doesn't change with the team changing around him. You don't reevaluate his performance differently just because the team wasn't good. The fact is, he was basically the kicker he was in college, not particularly accurate, not consistent, really, and that was what he was this season. That was going to be true whether the Packers were good as a team or bad as a team, and that is worth, I think, keeping in your mind as you evaluate where he was. He's going to have to take big strides this offseason heading into 2024. Daniel Whelan, the punter, look, what are the odds? Here we are sitting in March that after last year, what are the odds that an undrafted free agent punter battling an incumbent at his own position ends up being the best of the bunch in terms of the Packers specialists? So at the end of last year, you've got Mason Crosby, the kicker, you've got Jack Coco, the long snapper, and you've got Pat O'Donnell, the punter. Imagine this time last year being told that the Packers are going to draft a kicker, sign a long snapper in free agency, and bring back Pat O'Donnell, and a guy not on the roster at that point is going to be the guy you might feel the best about. That, I think, says a lot about Whelan's season in 2023. Pretty exciting development there as far as excitement over a punter goes. Matthew Orzech, the long snapper, in his position-by-position review, Ryan Wood went back and looked at every one of his snaps. He said he was not worried about his off-target snaps. When he was missing in the right direction, which was basically low and inside, where the holder can grab it more easily. He wasn't usually high on his snaps on kicks. Take that for whatever it's worth. One data point there. We might actually have to go back and review all of his snaps at some point this year, this offseason. But let's face it, going to have to be pretty bored at some point this offseason to really do that. But we'll take a look. For another data point there, at least according to Pro Football Focus, There were 449 players who played at least 131 special team snaps in 2023. Of those 449, Orzech graded out 414th. Again, I don't know what goes into that. Pro Football Focus's grading process is generally pretty opaque and is especially so for special team stuff, but another data point there. Then your special teams exclusive guys. This is not really an evaluation of those guys, but another data point for you to consider. The Packers had a few guys this year who were basically exclusive special teams players, and I define that for our year-end review stuff as guys who played 100 or more snaps on special teams and 70% or more of their total snaps, including their primary unit, so offense or defense, 70% of their total snaps had to come on special teams. So we had four guys in that category this year. Eric Wilson, who played 309 special team snaps, 71% of his total snaps were on special teams. Christian Welch, the linebacker, played 210 snaps on special teams, 100% of his snap count for the year. We actually forgot to mention him in our linebacker episode, but there's nothing to talk about in terms of what he did on defense this year because he didn't play a single snap on that side of the ball. Zane Anderson, the safety, played 127 snaps on special teams, zero on defense, so another 100% for him. And Robert Rochelle, the cornerback, played 112 snaps on special teams. That, again, was 100% of his play time this year. In terms of special teams productivity, the Packers had five guys this year with four or more special teams tackles. That's about comparable to usual. Those five guys were Jonathan Owens with seven, Eric Wilson with seven, Isaiah McDuffie, Christian Welch, and Robert Rochelle, who had four apiece. Just for your own notes, in previous years, the Packers have had eight guys with that total in 2022. Six guys in 2021, four in 2020, and five in 2019. I don't know exactly what goes into that being a factor, why you have more in some years and fewer in other years, but I just think it's an interesting kind of data point, and it lets you see who is making waves on special teams. Dating back to special teams, here's your final special teams nugget of the year. Dating back to 2019, Alan Lazard was one of the Packers' leading special teams tacklers, had four special teams tackles this year, and he has advanced all the way to being a healthy scratch for the New York Jets as a highly paid wide receiver. How things can change in just five short years. So I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I would appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. It's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.